Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcast. This is Podcast 509. I am getting ready to roll out of Minneapolis and St. Paul, headed for South Dakota. Why am I going to South Dakota? I'm going there because that is the closest state which has a primary, which is on June 7th, which is really the last day of the 2016 presidential primary season. Now, there is another primary in Washington, D.C., which I think is the last one, and I forgot the date, but it's after these primaries in California, Montana, New Mexico, South Dakota, and so forth. But I thought, let's go to South Dakota. So just to test all the systems, make sure everything's working in the truck, I am live from remote location, mobile podcast command, in my driveway. And I thought I would pull the mics out, and then I thought, you know what, I'm going to do it in the truck because I got to make sure that everything works. So that is the gist of Podcast 509. This is just going to be straight up gonzo talk about my trip and why I'm going and some other stuff in Podcast 509. So getting ready to go out on my trip to South Dakota, on my trip to South Dakota in my ambulance, makes me think about these team building exercises where they take the whole office to some place and they have to do rappelling. Or they take you to South Dakota for some weird marathon thing or something like that, or, you know, someplace in northern Minnesota. And, you know, that's fine if you're the company athlete, but if you're not, those kinds of things can be terrifying, and people come away with different opinions and ideas about those things. And do they work to build teams? I don't know. So what I'm going to do is suggest something to you that is a great new, sophisticated, and fun way to bond with your employees and clients, although generally we're talking about team building, so we're talking about bonding with your employees and in a very relaxed, fun atmosphere. This is Brush Studio in the West End in St. Louis Park. Brush Studio events are held in a relaxed and social setting. I've been telling you about this for a while. It's actually really a cool event, and for, especially in today's diverse workplace, where maybe 25 or 30 years ago you could do that kind of stuff where it's like we're going to rappel down a cliff or walk across coals. But with the diversity in the workplace now, something like this is actually better for building team efforts than maybe something like what you would do 25, 20 years ago. The way Burr Studio works is an artist guides the team through the featured painting step by step. They actually paint a painting. It's not paint by numbers. They paint a painting. And people are literally amazed at what they are able to create with this little bit of direction. And it is a, you know, they call this a unique brush with art instead of, you know, coming away with bruises and scrapes and things like that by some crazy physical effort. And it's a great opportunity for all the people on your team to bond without having to, as I've said, walk across coals. This is the thing that I think is really cool about Brush Studio. Brush Studio events are designed for left brain people to bring out the right brain, and that means ideas. So business owners, small or large, this is such a better way to build a team than spending all day in some conference room at a hotel with cold coffee. Plus, it doesn't matter if it's hot or if it's cold because you're inside, it's evening, it's great. They've got 22 brands of beer at Brush Studio and a really extensive wine collection. So if you want to find out more, check out the Brush Studio banner at the top of the Bob Davis Podcast page. That is brushstudio.net. It takes you to their page. There's video on there that shows what they do. But just remember, this is how ideas get created, by exercising that left brain and right brain kind of experience. Reach out to Brush Studio. Find out more. 952-236-1700. 952-236-1700. Brush Studio. So the rules of Gonzo Talk are no notes and no editing. So I'm just going to sit here and do what I really don't like to do and what I am not comfortable doing these days, which is just to sit and talk, open the mics and talk. Some people really like these kinds of podcasts. I have found that it's difficult to do them for me now because it's hard for me to organize all my thoughts because I'm looking at so many different things. So I like to make these podcasts compact so that you can listen to it on your commute or two podcasts. If they're 33, 34 minutes a piece or less, then it's a little more manageable. But sometimes they're longer and that's fine. But I don't like to ramble because it just bothers me. So, and when I get going, I have a tendency to ramble and cover so many different things. And then I listen to it later and go, you introduced that topic and it wasn't, you never actually paid off on it. You never finished the topic. You just introduced it and you went on and you never got back to it. That's why I like to kind of organize my thoughts, make some notes. But the rules are no notes and, to my chagrin, no editing. Sometimes with the editing, I can fix that kind of stuff. But if I don't edit, then I'm just basically reduced to sitting here and talking, and hopefully I can pull it all together in some way, shape, or form. So it's about midnight. I'm getting ready to go to South Dakota. The mobile podcast command is not running. It's shut down, but I've got all the electricity up and running. Just testing all the systems, making sure the lights are in and everything's working and the computer is functioning. I'm getting power where it needs to get and cleaning the coffee machine out with vinegar and a bunch of other stuff. Just getting ready to go. And I debated this, and I don't know if you've been listening to the podcast, but I said I didn't know if I wasn't sure if I wanted to go or didn't want to go. Why am I going? It seems kind of silly. And then I thought, you know, I'll bet you that almost no one is going to cover the South Dakota primary. I would be surprised. I mean, I know that regional Minnesota media and regional Iowa media will send trucks over there. They'll send trucks over across the border. And I know nothing really about South Dakota. I went to Sturgis last year. Of course, I know Rapid City, but I don't know much about South Dakota. So I don't know where I'm going to go or what I'm going to do. I'm thinking Deadwood, but I may not go that far. I don't know. And I'm sure, again, regional Iowa, regional Minnesota television may do some stuff out there, but I doubt that there will be the massive media coverage that there is going to be in California. And I did debate going to California, and then I decided that that is ridiculous in terms of length of trip, and I'm not doing that anymore unless I have a reason to do it. The days of wandering around the country in podcast command, I think, have been quenched because I've gone east, I've gone south, I've gone west. The only places I haven't gone is I haven't gone to New England, and I haven't gone to the Northwest. I haven't gone to Washington and Oregon. And I may eventually do that, but I'm not going to just get in the truck and wander. So I thought, you know, a short trip, and from where I am, which is in Minneapolis and St. Paul, then we're sort of on the indent of the Arrowhead there, so it's only a short hop, skip, and a jump over to South Dakota to get there. So I should be able to get there overnight tonight, and if I do a podcast now, then I have all day Monday to just kind of wander around South Dakota and figure out where I want to go and perhaps who I want to talk to before and during Tuesday's primary. So I think a lot of people have tuned out, and I think a lot of people tuned out as soon as Ted Cruz withdrew from the presidential race. I think a lot of people tuned out of the primary stuff, and I think that coverage of the South Dakota primary will probably be in short supply, which is why I thought perfect. It's a perfect place to go for a lot of reasons. First of all, the presidential campaign coverage of the BobDavisPodcasts.com started in Wisconsin last summer with the announcement of Scott Walker. In fact, I still have the Scott Walker It Begins press pass that they handed out at that event that I ended up having to fight for at that event. And I realized later through coverage of some of these other things that you really don't need the press pass. You just, you're not going to get any special access. Just show up with your recorder and do what you do. But that was the first one, and that was in June of last year. So it's been 1 year since we started covering the primaries, and that was 2015 with the announcement of Scott Walker. And then the primary season began in Iowa in February of this year. So I went down to Iowa to cover the first primary, the caucus in Iowa. And you guys remember that podcast going down, and it was great because that was the mega trip. That was the trip that took 6 weeks. I covered Iowa all over the place, and then I went down to South Carolina and thought I would do the same thing there. And after about the third trip back and forth between Columbia and Charleston, that's 190 miles or whatever it is, I just thought to myself, I'm not doing this anymore. This state is just too big and it's not accessible. You can't go to these different events. And the whole thing about the Iowa caucuses is most of the events are centered pretty much around Des Moines. Their aims, you know, Des Moines, Iowa City, Council Bluffs, and around that. Well, Council Bluffs is further west, but I'm just saying that most of the events were within shouting distance. As the committeewoman explained in one of the podcasts, that they've sort of turned the caucuses and primaries into kind of an industry down there. But I've reported on that ad infinitum, and I don't need to do that anymore. So the early states, Minnesota and Iowa and South Carolina, got all the attention and most of the media attention. And I decided, after coming back from the mega trip where I went all the way down around the coast, all the way down the coast of Florida and back up through, you know, the central part of the United States, Texas and all that, which was really off the campaign trail, but it was great to see the whole country. And I'm going to talk about that, hopefully, if I remember in a second. It was great to see, you know, a big, huge chunk of the country first last year with the trip out west, and then this year with a trip into the Mid-South and further south, the Kentucky, Tennessee, Virginia, et cetera, Georgia. So it was great to see the whole country and get off the campaign trail. But then I thought, well, do I want to go out and cover Indiana? Because Indiana's close. I could have gone over to cover Indiana. And I decided I kind of gone through a little bit of a metamorphosis politically. And I'm sorry to go on and on about where I went and what I did. But, you know, the process kind of taught me that there is a surreal characteristic to this, in that these are people. These are just human beings. These are people that look very much like you and I. I think in some ways they are very much like you and I, except they've decided to do this political thing. And it's magnified and intensified and made surreal by the fact that there is so much media coverage of what is going on. And so these events, as I said in numerous podcasts, become events which are really created for the media for mass consumption. That's really what it's all about. And then I think the candidate that has really mastered the ability to use these events to basically, you know, sort of overpower the media and get, you know, break down the media news cycle and break down the ability of the media to analyze it, is Donald Trump, who realized that early, when you go out and you speak to large groups of people and say crazy things, you get a lot of media coverage. And that's how he won all these primaries. That's how he kind of got ahead of people like Jeb Bush early on, and really put the establishment in its place in the Republican Party. So that brings us to June 7th in South Dakota and California and Montana and New Mexico and a couple of other places. And the fact that most of the action has now shifted to California, where Bernie Sanders is giving Hillary Clinton fits. I don't know if you saw the news story this weekend that the podium collapsed while Hillary was speaking. That was great. That was certainly very interesting, and I'm sure that was probably nothing. If you were at the event, you probably didn't even know that it happened, but because it was on television, it was a big thing. So there's all kinds of stuff going on in California focused on Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, because that's the race. And now what we're left with is a few fits and jumps and hints, you know, from the establishment about perhaps something happening at the convention. The most recent ridiculous thing was, I don't know what he is, lawyer and columnist, commentator David French. I've never even heard of the guy. Who was supposedly going to run as an independent candidate, you know, according to William Kristol. And that kind of fizzled out because French said this weekend he's not going to be a candidate for president. And I don't know whether Kristol was suggesting him or what he was trying to do on Twitter, saying, hey, there may be a new, you know, what? Who knows what happened. But this is what happens in this whole thing. And I don't, you know, I don't want to keep saying this, because I think it goes without saying that, you know, Twitter and to a lesser extent Facebook, but it's Twitter and it's these televised events that are driving this campaign. And so someone like Donald Trump can, and really also Bernie Sanders, because they are a little bit more authentic, perhaps, because they are a little bit less scripted, because they are a little less disciplined, regardless of where they're coming from politically, are able to dominate the media process because of that. So what we're left with is we're left with some minor coverage of the fight between Bernie and Hillary, because nobody really believes in the media that that's going to result in a Bernie Sanders nomination. I beg to differ. I think the Democrats actually should nominate Bernie Sanders. Everyone I know who is a Democrat thinks Bernie is great. You know, I saw my first Facebook post this weekend that somebody put up that said he's not getting media coverage because the media is ignoring him, which is a weird echo of Ron Paul in, what was it, 2008 or 2004? I guess it was 2008. Maybe it was 2012. My memory eludes me, but I guess it was 2012, the last time that Ron Paul ran for president. And that was the big complaint among Paulites, that he wasn't getting enough media and that the other guys were getting all the media, blah, blah, blah. So there's that. And the other part of the media seems to now be focused on trying to position Trump in some way, shape, or form. So it's either Trump can't win because here's the electoral battle and there's no way that he can win these states. So, and why? Well, I went through all the polls this weekend, looked at all the polls. Well, and as I said in earlier podcasts, if there's one thing that we've learned in this primary season, if there's one thing we've learned in the process with Donald Trump, it's don't say what's going to happen. You know, by the way, I'm sitting on the bench seat in the ambulance, so this is a little more echoey. If I was sitting on the other side, it would be all bassy. So I like this side, actually. It's a little easier for me to watch what I'm doing and keep checking the equipment and everything to make sure it's all good, but I'm sitting on this side. But so those are kind of the two sort of branches of media coverage right now, which is Bernie and Hillary in California. And the, you know, that storyline will change if Bernie Sanders wins. If he doesn't win, I think, I don't know what's going to happen at that point. But if Bernie Sanders does well in California, if he does well by winning California, if he does well then and wins California and wins some combination of California, New Mexico, Montana, South Dakota, because South Dakota is a Republican and Democrat primary, then they will have something to talk about. But in lieu of that, this weekend and the last week or so, you know, there's really nothing to talk about except this idea of positioning Donald Trump as a this or a that. And I'm going to talk about that in a couple of seconds here. Well, everybody here knows that I do yoga. And of course, when I go on the road, I never know where I'm going to find to do yoga or what it's going to be like. But I can tell you one thing that is a constant with yoga and me, and that is Hydrus, H-Y-D-R-U-S. Hydrus is a high-performance beverage. It uses new technology to get critical electrolytes into your bloodstream and into your muscles with unrivaled speed and effectiveness. There's no sugar in it, which is great if you're on the protein diet, right? It doesn't matter if you're doing CrossFit, if you're biking, if you are, you know, maybe playing hockey or softball or something like that. For me, it's just being in these crowded rooms of over 100 degrees with high humidity. Today, I must have dumped a quart of water out of my body at yoga. And, you know, today was really tough, I have to say, but I got through it because I have Hydrus. And I also realized today that I need to take a break because I've been pushing myself really hard because I can with Hydrus. You can take it to the edge, and that's where you grow. That's where you learn. That's where you get the benefit of whatever kind of exercise you're doing. I have a friend who is riding 100 miles. Riding 100 miles, and he's doing it because of Hydrus in a big way. So let me tell you, if you want to find out more about it, go to HydrusPerformance.com. That's H-Y-D-R-U-S, HydrusPerformance.com. That explains the whole thing. It shows you how you can join the performance hydration revolution. Hydrus is great stuff. I use it every day. I'm a crazy super power Hydrus user, and I really believe in it, and I encourage people to check it out. HydrusPerformance.com. So I don't know which podcast it was. I guess it was 507, which, by the way, I did not include in the radio show this weekend because the political stuff has very low energy. It's like heavy metal. It just kind of makes you feel dirty and tired, and it isn't a good thing. I'm trying to create observations that supersede a lot of what is going on politically. And that whole podcast that I did, I guess it was 506 on technology, got a lot of great response. And I guess from all my geek friends, but it did get a lot of good response. So I made the whole radio show about new technologies and decentralized government and how the people that we're talking about in politics almost all believe in continuing this process of centralization and more government, which I feel is completely the wrong direction. So that's the main reason why I find myself unable to support, agree with, endorse, or otherwise feel positive about any of the presidential candidates this year. And I think that I will probably never come on to the podcast or the radio and tell you who to vote for and who I think should be president. I don't think I will ever advocate for a president. I think that for the foreseeable future, my advocacy is going to be about creating the kind of government that allows for the more effective use of technology. And I've also found that, especially this year, and I've talked about this too, so I don't want this to be a review podcast, but I found that that so much of the media is dedicated to predicting the future. And this week, you know, we really saw that with the podcast I did, I guess it was 507, where I talked about how, you know, first they called Trump an authoritarian, and then they called his supporters craving authoritarian leadership in an effort to equate them or conflate them with Nazis, with National Socialism, or with fascism, for lack of a better term, because we have to include Italy, and Italy had a different kind of fascism, I guess, although I don't know that it was materially that different from Germany. And, you know, it was the idea that a nice way to call somebody a fascist is to bring up this word authoritarian, because you almost have to look it up if you're not using it a lot, and if you're not dealing with it as currency in terms of thought. When you say authoritarian, it's hard to determine what somebody's talking about. So it's an easy way to call somebody a fascist in a stealthy, friendly way, if you like. So if you're a Trump supporter, you're obviously someone with authoritarian tendencies, or you're uneducated, or you're a knuckle dragger, or you're this or you're that. And then there was this whole thing that Trump is consistently inciting violence, and he is a potential, you know, this whole effort to equate Donald Trump with the brown shirts in Germany and Mussolini's, you know, I guess they were, I don't know, they have brown or black, I don't know what they're, but they used to ride around trucks and beat up communists and socialists, because fascism is a third way between socialism and communism. And in both Italy and Germany, the democratic government was breaking down. That was the birth of fascism in Central Europe. I think it was as unique as the Beatles, in the sense that the Beatles will never happen again. Elvis can never happen again, because the infrastructure, the media infrastructure, the record companies, the huge number of young people demographically just didn't exist, you know, don't exist in the present time frame. So you would never have a guy who could command all the radios and all the young people at one particular moment the way Elvis did, or the way the Beatles did, which is kind of an interesting little sideline compared to fascism. So, you know, academically, if you want to talk about fascism, you know, you've got to take into account the demographics, you got to take into account the economic issues, you got to take into account the time, the way that people communicated and everything else. Listen to that train back there. You may not be able to hear this if you're just listening on your computer, but if you're listening on headphones, you can hear it. Anyway, so that was the big thing. And this whole thing about inciting violence, that he's running around inciting violence. And I got to say, I don't hear him necessarily specifically inciting violence. What I do see are a lot of La Raza supporters spitting on people and pushing people and calling people names and that sort of thing. And I see the Trump supporters kind of taking it and kind of saying, hey, I have a right to be here. You have a right to be here. Now, I don't know whether that's controlled, but, you know, sending your people out to confront socialism, or to confront Black Lives Matter, or to confront La Raza is not inciting violence. It's practicing your right to free speech just as they are. So I don't see Trump inciting violence. If he starts inciting violence, you know, I'll be the first to mention that. But I, you know, or the 10th, I don't care. But I don't see that. I see the reaction to Trump as being violent. And by the way, I'm not a Trump supporter. You know, I got to say it. I'm not, and I'm also not playing the game where I say I'm not a Trump supporter, but I'm talking him up. You know, this is what's going on in the media. This is the trend of thought in political media this weekend and then the last week. This is what they're writing about. And so there's this effort to equate Trump with fascism in some way, shape, or form, which will continue. And I think you will see that if he's nominated, you will see that in the general election. You will see Hillary Clinton try to do it, and you will see, you know, if Bernie Sanders is nominated, you'll certainly, he'll try to equate Donald Trump and Trump supporters with fascists. And I personally think every time LaRosa goes out and spits on a protester, you know, a Trump supporter, or pushes a little Trump kid, or, you know, does something crazy or riots or pulls some trick like that, I think that causes people to vote for Trump. I think that it's helping him. And so if anyone's inciting the violence, it's the people who oppose Trump. And it's, I wish they wouldn't do it, because it's helping Donald Trump. So if you're for Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton, it's probably a good idea not to do that, because you're only hurting yourself, because the average citizen in this country sees that. And they don't have sympathy for the person spitting on somebody else. They have sympathy for the person being spit on or beat up or yelled at and being called bitch over and over and over. Bitch, 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 over and over again. You know, that you yell at people and the response is that even if the other guy was doing something, you know, reprehensible, you know, he's the one being yelled at, beat up, and spit on, right? So there's that. And the latest thing, I want to quickly talk about this, and I think this is really, really important. The latest thing, and they've been doing this all along, is to try to pull some election year out of history and say, "Boy, this is just amazing. This stuff that happened in 2016 is happening again." And look, the Republican Party is falling apart just like the Whig Party. The Whig Party was, I don't even remember what the Whig Party stood for. It was a sort of a bizarre political party that was, were they anti-slavery? I don't know. Were they pro-slavery? The Democrats were pro-slavery. The Whigs were anti-slavery, and I don't know. They had a bunch of, and it doesn't really even matter, but the Whig Party eventually broke up, and in the election of 1860, it simply fell apart and disappeared. And of course, everyone knows Abraham Lincoln got elected president in 1860. Have there been other bizarre, you know, times in U.S. history when third party candidates have? I mean, yes, it happens all the time. And so the latest attempt to equate Donald Trump with somebody who might be distasteful is the attempt by this historian on Politico, and I'm sorry, because I'd have to look at my phone to get the guy's name, and I'm not going to do it, but it's a nice article. A lot of scare quotes, by the way, around words like, you know, military leader, stuff like that, to describe the president, I think the 14th president of the United States, maybe 12th president of the United States, Zachary Taylor, who was from Kentucky. I thought he was from Virginia, but I guess Kentucky. Minnesotans will remember Taylor, because Taylor was one of the generals, if not the, I guess he opened up Fort Snelling. So Taylor spent his entire military career, starting with the War of 1812, where he was a captain, in distinguished service, both in combat and also building those forts across the West, of which Fort Snelling was only one of them. And he never really was interested in politics. He was thought to be a numbskull, thought to be adult, thought to be not very smart, which really isn't fair, because I don't know how you get to be a great leader in combat in the Mexican-American War and in the Seminole situation in Florida, as well as opening forts across the Midwest and Northwest at a very difficult time. You know, when the mosquitoes were as big as your hand, literally, in this part of the country, he was out chopping down, you know, trees and building a fort. So I don't know how you can say someone like that is a numbskull if they're commanding and they are the only guy. They're the main guy commanding a group of people who are really cut off from the rest of the world. You have to be pretty tough to be able to do that. And so at the time, people thought of Taylor as being dumb, And his rap in Washington was that he was dumb. And President Polk, who met with him and said that he was dumb. But as I've said before, I've read a couple books, actually, oddly enough, and by accident, on Zachary Taylor. And Zachary Taylor was not dumb. First of all, people don't know this, and I was surprised to see that this guy who wrote the article in Politico really didn't give Taylor enough credit, because Taylor, one of the things that Taylor did is he sort of had this aw shucks, I'm just a dumb general kind of thing going. And one of the things that he would do is wherever he was stationed, he would have his correspondence, as he referred to it, sent to him, which included letters from back home, but also included every periodical people could get their hands on to send him. So all during the time this guy was serving in the far reaches of the West that was supposedly cut off from Washington and supposedly not knowing anything about politics, he was reading extensively about politics. He was doing what we do today, which is he was basically going online and reading all about things that were going on. So he was a lot better informed than the people at the time knew, and I'm surprised, because the corollary of this is, gee, this is the same thing that happened in 1845 or something when he ran for president. He was only president for a year and a half or so, and he died of a gastro disease, which probably was caused by a bacterial or a viral infection. And he famously consumed a bunch of fruit and chilled milk at some event in Washington, and died about a month later from this stomach thing that nobody knew what it was. So the cure for it apparently is rehydration and rest, and they bled him and they blistered him, and, you know, basically the doctors killed him. So that's, you know, they do the same thing they do today with cancer. They basically kill you. And if you survive the treatment, then you're cured. And if you don't, then you're dead. Anyway, what was I saying? So this idea that the Republican Party is the Whig Party, and it's going to fall apart because Donald Trump is going to be nominated for the presidential, and he's going to run, and even if he wins, it's going to be a disaster, because it was a disaster with Zachary Taylor. I just want to say one more thing about Taylor. He was only president for a year, but he reversed or at least ameliorated the manifest destiny of the United States by signing a treaty with Britain regarding the groundwork for the building of the Panama Canal later, almost 50, 60 years later. He got California admitted as a free state, which was huge. He almost got the Compromise of 1850 passed. He worked very closely with, I think it was Calhoun, on that. And he also very much avoided the use of executive power. So he disagreed with the Whigs in some key areas. He disagreed with Democrats in some key areas. And I think for a guy who was president for a year and a half, he probably is one of the most underrated presidents that we have had. And there's no chance that he'll ever, you know, be rehabilitated. But I think comparing Donald Trump to Taylor, because Taylor had inherited large sums of money, he was the largest slave owner in the country at the time, and he was very wealthy because of his land holdings and plantations across the country because of his family, makes him some corollary to Donald Trump, because he was, you know, a rich guy. They didn't nominate him because he was a rich guy. They nominated him because he was a very famous general after the Mexican-American War. In two battles, he acquitted himself brilliantly, and, you know, he was a popular general in the United States. It was a sense of nationalism. He wasn't nominated because he was wealthy. As far as the Whig Party is concerned, here we had a period of time in American history when we really had to decide about the institution of slavery. And the Republicans, in the form of Abraham Lincoln, much later, 10 years later or whatever it was, it was about 10 years later, finally came to grips with this issue of slavery developed, and it came about as the result of the abolitionist movement. We realized we've just got to get rid of this, and the South didn't want to, and, you know, the rest is history. That was something that was developing, and the Whig Party just got lost in all that. And that seems to be the thing to do today. If you don't like a political party, you call it the Whig Party. I can remember being on the radio and comparing the Democrats after Kerry Edwards lost in 2000, whenever it was, 8 to Bush. I remember comparing the Democrats to the Whig Party, that if they didn't get it together, they were going to go the way of the Whig Party. And people were writing about that. And as you recall, Bush got up and said, "I've got a lot of capital, I intend to spend it." Well, you know, he did. And unfortunately, he spent it in ways that have really produced a lot of damage for the Republican Party that we're dealing with today. Is the Republican Party going to continue? I don't know, and I really don't care whether the Republican Party continues. It's down on the rails right now, down on its luck. It's knocked back on its heels. Whether or not Trump is going to rehabilitate the Republican Party, we don't know, because honestly, we don't even know if he's going to be the nominee at this point. It's a long way from here until the convention in July, and certainly a long way from here to the Democrat convention as well. So we don't even know who the candidates are going to be, and I don't care what the delegates say. You know, Taylor was nominated, to use the same corollary, on the third or fourth ballot at the convention in, oddly enough, Philadelphia. That was the Whig convention in Philadelphia. So I think it's dangerous to draw parallels in history to the current time frame, because we're dealing with different demographics, we're dealing with a different country, we're dealing with different issues, and I think it's dangerous to say this political party is falling apart because this reason. You don't know what's going to happen with the Republicans. They could rally around someone like Trump. And the final thing that I would say is this. Predicting what kind of president someone is going to be is very dangerous, because if you're the predictor, if we've learned anything this year, predictions are worthless because things are not playing out the way the predictors constantly say. If you're one of these people that wants to predict how somebody's presidency is going to go, you know, history may view it differently. As I said, Taylor's presidency, for a guy that was president for a year and a half, you know, he staved off an attempted secession by the South. He deserves credit for a pretty extensive international agreement, as I said. He got California in as a free state. And he also had to deal with office holders day after day after day, or office seekers, rather, day after day after day, and Congress. And he was not accustomed to that kind of thing. But I don't think he was stupid, and I don't think he was a terrible president either. I think Buchanan was a terrible president, because Buchanan could not also solve the slavery issue either, and was notoriously weak. So predicting that Donald Trump will be a horrible president if he becomes president is fraught with difficulties, because Donald Trump could turn out to be quite a, you know, he could turn out to be quite a adequate president. I don't want him to be president, but I don't want any of them to be president, because I think the executive branch is too powerful. I think we need somebody that's going to cut down its power, not increase its power. And but you know, having said that, I would just say that I think the problem is with voters. I think voters, I think the people are confused, and I think we just have to play this out and see where we end up, because we're in one of those periods of history where there's just so many pieces to all of this. Which brings me to my final point, which is this is the reason I love to travel. This is the reason that I love to get out of here and, you know, tour the country. Because I find that the country is not falling apart. I find people to be doing the things that they always did when I used to travel with my family most of the time. And I find it refreshing and something that fills me with optimism when I travel the country. And I think there's a lot of attention being paid to politics right now, as though it's the most important thing in the world. But when you go out and you see the country and you see what people are doing, they seem to cope pretty well despite who's in the White House. Well, one of the things about Mobile Podcast Command is I get to go everywhere, and I've noticed, you know, I'm getting ready to go to the EAA Air Show in Oshkosh, and I got to get on the phone with those people and find a place to park Mobile Podcast Command again. And it reminds me that Alpha Systems is also going to be at EAA. If you're a pilot and you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, or you love a pilot and you want that pilot to be safe on takeoffs and landings, look into Alpha Systems. They make the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. The bottom line is Alpha Systems AOA saves lives. Here's what you do. Click on the Alpha Systems banners for more info about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at thebobdavispodcast.com. Takes you to the website. They've got a lot of explanations and information about how it works. It's FAA approved. It really does help to have a visual indicator of your angle of attack on final approach. If you're a pilot, you guys know all about that. Alpha Systems AOA saves lives. Thanks once again to Hydrus. If you're looking for that high-performance beverage that helps you hydrate and gets you to the point where you can take it to the edge and grow and be better at whatever kind of exercise you do and get more out of it, it's Hydrus. Visit HydrusPerformance.com, HYDRUS, HydrusPerformance.com for more info. And you can actually order Hydrus from that website. So it's HydrusPerformance.com. And thanks, you guys, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast. If you're trying to do some kind of corporate team building exercise for summer, don't forget Brush Studio in the West End. It's a great new way to bond with your employees and build a team through an activity that really encourages left brain people to bring out the right brain. It's amazing what you can do. People come away with paintings they hang on their walls. If you want more information, click on the Brush Studio banner at the top of the BobDavisPodcast.com or just visit brushstudio.net, or you can just call them. Here's the number, 952-236-1700. That's 952-236-1700. They got a great selection of beer and wine. It's a fun time, a fun evening inside where it's AC, you know, where you have air conditioning, and in the West End in St. Louis Park. And thanks, you guys, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. Thank you for listening on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn. Thanks for liking and sharing and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. I'm the Bob Davis Podcasts on Instagram and also at Bob Davis Podcasts on Twitter. And thanks for your donations, of course, for Mobile Podcast Command. Got to fill up with diesel, get some Komodo Dragon coffee, stop at a Trader Joe's and get some beef jerky. And then I am on my way. So everything is running great. It looks good. So we're ready to roll. Thanks for listening to podcast 509, the Bob Davis Podcasts, live from my driveway.